good morning, TNC family. On this third Sunday in July, where today here, we are in part five, the final installment of our annual summer series centered around authors and their brand new scholarship surrounding biblical theology and a life of spirituality and faith. Today's book is written by Anne Lamott. And in the second paragraph of chapter one, she writes this: "There is a story I live by, which I have been telling my Sunday school kids for 30 years now, and which they never tire of, or at least have the good sense to still pretend to enjoy if they have any hope of getting the snacks. A young girl is having a hard time falling asleep one night and calls out for her mother. Her mother comes in and gently tucks her in again and assures her that Jesus is there in the room with her, so she needn't be afraid. But this cycle goes on and on, each time the increasingly annoyed mother saying basically the same thing, until finally, in the dark, the little girl says plaintively, 'I need someone with skin on.'" Anne Lamott writes, "This is the main instruction that I would leave my family in my swag bag of spiritual truth: be goodness with skin on." And then she writes, "We are called to be love that wears socks and shoes." Anne Lamott is 70 years old. She was born in 1954 in San Francisco, California. For decades, she's been one of the most popular spiritual writers in America. She's received numerous writing awards, authored 20 books, both as a novelist and a nonfiction writer. I've read maybe 6 or 7 of them, all of them worth it. The first one, I'll never forget, I read in 1999, when the country was up in arms about Y2K. The book, having nothing to do with that, was titled Traveling Mercies, Thoughts on Faith, in which she confesses that her faith did not start with a leap, but rather a series of staggers, and in which she affirmed that for her, life and faith are like driving a car at night. You can see only as far as your headlights, but that's enough because you can make the whole trip that way. This is the book in which she said, "Forgiveness is giving up all hope of having had a different past. And not forgiving is like drinking rat poison and then waiting for the rat to die. Courage? Courage is fear that has said its prayers. And make friends with fear," she wrote, "because when you make friends with fear, it can't rule you." And then this, all this is from Traveling Mercies. She said, "I always imagined when I was a kid that adults had some kind of inner toolbox full of shiny tools, the saw of discernment, the hammer of wisdom, the sandpaper of patience. But then when I grew up, I found that life hands you rusty, bent, old tools, tools called friendships, prayer, conscience, honesty, and says, 'Do the best you can with these, they'll have to do.' And I've discovered that mostly against all odds, they do." And you probably are already getting a sense, or if you've read any of her writing, then you know that all of her writing is just this obvious and admirable mix of raw transparency and humor that keeps you off guard, yet fully engaged. Over the years, she's written about her journey with alcohol addiction, a dysfunctional family, Christianity, becoming a grandmother, being stereotyped, getting canceled at the last minute from giving a graduation address because of one of her social media posts, and then the dozens of emails that students from the school sent to the president. She's written about the creative process and getting married for the first time as a senior citizen, and so much more. One reviewer wrote about her, quote, "She is walking proof that a person can be both reverent and irreverent in the same lifetime, sometimes even in the same breath." In this book, the one we're going to consider today, at one point she writes about how she's grateful her mind doesn't have a public address system because, quote, "I talk and preach goodness and kindness, especially to people who are hurting, which is most of the people in the world. But often in my mind, I'm just scrambling and striving to get ahead of everybody. I feel like I'd be one of the people on the Titanic that is pushing even older ladies out of the way so I could get to one of the lifeboats. So I don't pretend to be a good Christian. I just happen to really love Jesus and to have found a home in him. This book, published just a few months ago, is called Somehow, Thoughts on Love, and it's mostly a book filled with story after story after story, little essays, scenes, vignettes of love, about fog and songs, park benches and the homeless, door hinges and cowboys, Sunday school and ocean tides, braces for your teeth and 19th century poets. All of the book really is centered around the question, how are you living? How are you loving? Because it's the same question, but a better question, because to the extent that you are loving well, that's the extent to which you are living well. Thoughts on Love, and it's less linear, less step one, step two, step three, less how to get from A to Z, and more bits of wisdom to carry around with you about love, things to remember along the way. And today, TNC, I want to share 10 bits of wisdom about love with you from the book, because periodically throughout the book, she will start a sentence with these two words, love is, love is. And if you're reading the book, you'll read these two words side by side dozens of times. But what I want to do here is mention just 10 of those times in relatively rapid succession, partly because I want to just pique your interest to read the book yourself, but also because it will give us maybe a 40,000-foot overview of love. And the scope of all these sentences will, I hope, help us realize how vast and important love is across all fields and in all spheres of life. And also because she has so many pithy lines about love that part of me wants to just get them all out there for us to hear so that they can begin to do some work in us. But also because her conviction that love is all we need, and especially the love of God infusing us, this conviction is so compelling that I want you to get a wider dose of her writing, all of which means today may feel different than the more usual podcast format. But here we go, 10 love is sentences from her book. Number one, love is nearby if you know what to look for. She writes, my husband said something that I often quote, 80% of everything that is true and beautiful can be experienced on any 10-minute walk. Even in the darkest and most devastating times, love is nearby if you know what to look for. It does not always appear at first to be lovely, but instead may take the form of a hot mess or a snoring old dog or someone you've sworn to never, ever forgive. But mixed in with all of that will also be more familiar signs of love, good-hearted people, a spray of wildflowers, a cup of tea, the warmth we feel in the presence of a favorite relative, a smile, the kindness of a waitress, the warmth of a handshake or a hug, new babies, peace marches, sunshine in winter, breeze in summer, laughter and on. Love is like Wi-Fi, she says, already there if you'll just connect. It's like a radio station that we can tune into. Love is nearby if you know what to look for. Number two, love is hard. And she talks throughout the book about how love is both hard to give and hard to receive. It's hard to give because, well, we are often taught not to love. She writes, quote, I was taught to strive, to feel ashamed, to keep the family secrets, to believe I was better than, yet always in danger of lagging behind. I was taught to judge and surpass, and above all, to showcase a shiny surface of confidence, individualism, and self-sufficiency. I was taught to observe other people's mediocrity and general ruin and to make quiet and harsh comments about it. And so she says, we are set up often to think of ourselves first and others second. We were not taught to love, which makes it hard to love. Love is hard. Love is also hard, she talks about, because it often requires sacrifice and time and a refusal to enable. She writes at one point about how she stood in a street outside her door with her addict son in 2011, quote, with a sharpened pencil held near his throat, and I told him he could not come back until he stopped using drugs. Tough love. She then writes, I was able to welcome him back a month later, but love is hard. It requires self-sacrifice and setting boundaries and saying no and saying yes. And love is also hard to receive because sometimes we're just too busy or we're too tired. I'll just stay home. And so we actually remove ourselves from atmospheres and situations where we can be loved. And sometimes we're too afraid to be vulnerable or honest, things that we have to be if we want to be loved. Lamott quotes 19th century English poet and artist William Blake at one point, who wrote, we are here to learn to endure the beams of love. In other words, love comes on all these beams, sometimes beams that are easy to celebrate and revel in, but other times beams that feel more like they must be endured. Love is hard. Number three, love is interconnectedness. She quotes the American minister and author Frederick Buechner, who wrote, you can survive on your own, you can grow strong on your own, you can prevail on your own, but you cannot become human on your own. Because to be fully human, you have to understand that we're all interconnected. And we have to come to see that mutual love and respect is the absolute greatest way to be interconnected. It reminds me of that famous novel called Invisible Cities by Italo Calvino. In the novel, there's a fictional city where everyone lives in apartments and people's apartments are all connected by threads. So imagine that the threads are strung from one apartment and across the street and down the block to another apartment, and each thread represents a different kind of relationship. If the people in two apartments are relatives, the threads are black. If their financial well-beings are connected, the threads are white. If they work in the same business, the threads are gray. Imagine now dozens and dozens of threads based on dozens and dozens of connections. Kids go to the same school, thread. Shop at the same store, thread. Drive on the same street, thread. Enjoy the same hobbies, a thread. And eventually the threads go so numerous and thick and multi-shaded, it's impossible to walk through the city. The point is, we are all interconnected, and love is about embracing our interconnectedness. Number four, love is reaching out to people and not being a jerk. That's on page 88. Love is reaching out to people and not being a jerk. After which she writes, this is something I will definitely whisper to my grandson from the great beyond after I'm gone. Don't be a jerk. Wave, smile, listen, let somebody go first. Show up when you don't need to for you, but they need you to show up. Don't be a jerk. Be patient. Don't be a jerk. Be kind. Do not boast. Do not dishonor somebody. Don't be easily angered. Keep no record of wrongs. 1 Corinthians 13. Love always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love is reaching out to people and not being a jerk. Number five, love is energy. She says, love is our very atmosphere, the one energy that Einstein describes as being that which is the only thing there is. She says, I'm a believer in a different reality besides the visible. I believe that there is this energy inside of us and surrounding us that we're all made of, and we're made for it, and we're called to it. We have it to offer to those who are feeling frightened or empty. Love is energy, the movement of grace in our lives. And when you feel generosity and surrender and stamina, that's the energy of love. Spiritual WD-40. When you're clenched up, knotted up, then something very mysterious spritzes you, she says. It's often some form of love. Love is this energy. Number six, love is an inside job. And here she talks about growing in love and in our ability to experience it and extend it. Because she says, you cannot get it from out there. You can't buy love, rent it, lease it, achieve it, or put it on a bumper sticker. It's an inside job. It has to do with the inner healing of the spirit. It includes things like learning to sit with yourself and being present and honest, connecting with the divine, asking yourself tough questions, and being willing to change your mind based on the answers. And whenever you want to have a loving feeling inside, she says, all you need to do is do a loving thing outside for somebody else, and then suddenly love will start growing inside of you. Love is an inside job. Number 7, love is God. Quoting Lamott again, I just see God as love. That's what I teach my Sunday school kids. Love is God. God is love. When you see loving, generous acts between people, that's God. And when you come to know you're loved, then you've come to know God. Number 8, love is the source of our hope. Page 95, if you have hope, she writes, it's because you have love. You cannot be hopeless if you have love. And then she uses this great illustration of romantic love, although it applies across all types of love. She writes about a date she was on with her future husband. Quote, our 10th date, which was 10 days after our first meeting, Neil and I were sitting across from each other at a small table in our favorite cafe in the county, and I made a move. Hussy that I am, I reached past the sugar and the salt. I touched the tip of his forefinger with mine and rubbed his fingernail. Maybe it was not the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel, but deep inside I felt a reverberation, vibrations of joy and fear, the sound of a whole new world on its way. And that's love. When you see and feel love, it leads to the realization that, to quote the writer Arend Hadi Roy, another world is not only possible, she's on her way. When we love, it's the springboard for hope on its way. Number 9, and this one is a little twist. Number 9, not love is killing us. Not loving one another, not loving the created order, not doing to others what we would have them do to us. Not loving is killing us. TNC, if you look around at the pain in our world, from families to communities to cities to countries to our world, look at anger, addiction, loneliness, lying, violence, war. At its root is not love. Not love is killing us. Which leads to number 10. Number 10, love is enough, somehow. Lamott said recently in an interview, my real age is 70. I'm a very young 70, though, except for physically and cognitively. And then she went on, being my age means that everything has hurt at one point or another, and I know what to do for a lot of different ailments. One of the things about being 70 is that everything has happened at least once, almost everything. And I know how you come through what happens. I know what helps and I know what doesn't help. Christian bumper stickers, Bible texts, sweet platitudes don't help, don't work. What works when somebody's going through unsurvivable loss is that you show up and you sit with them. And you're willing to feel what they feel with them, and you don't try to get them to feel any better than they do for as long as it takes them. It could be years, some losses we never recover from, but like having a badly broken leg where it heals, with love, you can learn to dance again just with a limp. I'm going to end now, TNC, by simply reading the last paragraph of her book from page 191. If the younger ones in our lives can remember only this one idea, that they are here briefly, a little space, to love and to have been loved, then they will have all they need, because love is all they need. Rain or shine, good old love, elusive and steadfast, fragile and unbreakable, always there for the asking, always, somehow, one day at a time. Somehow. 1 hour at a time. Somehow. Love will be enough to see us through, get us back on our feet, and dust us off. Love gives us a shot at being the person we were born to be. Love is nearby, hard, the embrace of our human interconnectedness. Love is reaching out to people and not being a jerk. The universal energy, an inside job. Love is God, the source of hope wherever we have love. And not love is killing us, and love is enough somehow. Let's pray, and I want to pray today just the words of the writer of 1 John in chapter 4. Beloved, let us love one another, for love is from God. And whoever loves has been born of God and knows God. Anyone who does not love does not know God, because God is love. Beloved, if God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. No one has ever seen God, but if we love each other, God lives in us, and his love is brought to full expression in us. Amen.